The following is a presentation of Remnant. I am reaching from the depths of my soul. Hear me pleading. I'm a child, I'm a poor, I am needed. To draw on your virtue, believe
it. Hi, this is Jerry Godsey, co-pastor of Remnant. Remnant was begun with one goal, to touch people with God's incredible love. My prayer is that this study will comfort you, challenge you, and bring you one step closer to being the person God wants you to be. If this study is helpful or if you need more information, please drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Godsey.
The title of today's message is actually taken from a song that my aunt used to sing at Faith Assembly. And I've always loved the song. And I'll be honest with you, I looked for a video of the song, was going to play the song. And it's a Steve Green song. It's an old Steve Green song from the 80s. And it sounds very much like it's 20-something years old. So we're not playing it because, to be honest with you, the tune, it's a beautiful song. But if I were to play it, it would probably put you to sleep. And so I'll read you some of the words of it later. But it tells the story that we're going to read this morning. So the title of today's message is Broken and Spilled Out, taken from Matthew chapter 26. If you got your Bible, turn there. Matthew chapter 26, starting at verse 6. And then we're going to work our way through this passage. While Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar a very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste, they asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She's done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." When's the last time you had your breath taken away? And I don't mean because somebody punched you. Okay? When I was in high school, we had this, this stupid game. It was called Sucking Wind. And what you would do is you would be walking through the hallway, and then one of your friends would reach out just all of a sudden and punch you in the middle of the chest and try and make you suck wind. Why we thought this was funny, I don't know, but we were high school and we were stupid. Okay, so guys, I do not recommend that game. You can kill somebody. You can make them wish they were dead, and you look stupid hugging a locker and sucking in wind while you're, you know, your girlfriend, you're standing next to your girlfriend, so don't do that. I'm talking about, when's the last time you saw something so wonderful, so awe-inspiring that it just, I can count on, you know, both my hands the amount of times this happened to me in my life. It sounds corny, but it's true. But when I was standing at the front of the church in Beaumont waiting for my wife-to-be to come around the corner in her wedding dress, she came around out of the foyer and my knees got weak and I thought I was going to pass out in front of the church. It's true. When my boys were born, something incredible about the first time you hold your son in your arms. Wow. And then my grandson, the Too Cool Soren, first time I held him in my arms. I stood on the edge of a volcano in Nicaragua, and I peered down into an active volcano. And you honestly, as you look, you feel like you're just looking into the pit of hell. Just this dark. It's dark and foreboding. It's hot and steamy. And you know there's something bad underneath there. You're waiting for the lava to come up and hit you in the head. You know, and you look down at it and it just takes your breath away. That's the kind of moments I'm talking about. The kind of moments that just leave us speechless. We've all had them. We've all had different ones. You can't prepare for them. You can't describe them. Because I guarantee you, the words I just gave you do not compare to the way I felt. I don't have the words. I don't have the vocabulary to explain them to you. Think about it. Now, there are some of those in the Bible they try to describe. In chapter 6 of Isaiah, Isaiah saw the Lord, And we preached a message about this a few weeks ago. When Isaiah saw the Lord, he said, I became completely undone. And I said, Lord, I'm an unclean person. I live in a world of unclean lips. He saw the Lord, and it humbled him because of what he saw. Ezekiel just saw the appearance of the likeness of the Lord. He didn't even see the Lord. He just saw something that had an appearance that was kind of like the Lord. And it made him crazy. He said he immediately fell on his face because of what he saw. In the book of Revelation, John saw the risen Jesus in all of his heaven and glory. And what did he do? He said, I fell at his feet like I was dead. You get the feeling that seeing God is something incredible? You get the feeling that being in God's presence is something that takes your breath away? Did you know that we really should have those moments here? Do you know that every time we sing on Sunday morning, every time you go to worship in your personal prayer time, you should have that moment where you're just... The problem is we get used to stuff. The problem is we get used to being here. We get used to the songs. And we sing the songs because we like the music, and we forget about what the songs are actually saying. Let me tell you something. That last song we sang? And if our God is for us, who can be against us? And if our God is for us, who will ever stand against us? Our God is greater. Our God is stronger. Our God is higher than any other. If that doesn't take your breath away, you're singing it wrong. And I don't mean the notes. I mean your heart. We need what is described in this passage. And what I call this is urgent adoration. In fact, if you're a cop, I'd say it was exigent. Exigent adoration. See, in cop world, they have what's called exigent circumstances. If we knock at your door and we want you to come out, we need a search warrant to make you come out. But if we hear screaming, now we get to go in because there's somebody in danger. That's exigent circumstances. Okay, so let's talk about exigent adoration. Let's talk about wanting to worship God so badly that you've got to do it right now, and you don't care about the cost, you don't care about anything, you just got to do it now. That is how we need to approach God. That's the kind of relationship we're supposed to have with God. So I want to talk to you about urgent adoration. The passage that we just read, Mary had a breathtaking experience with Jesus. If you want to read a parallel of this, it's in John chapter 12. The Mary here is Mary, the sister of Martha and the sister of Lazarus. Remember Lazarus? He was the dude that died. And then Jesus came to the tomb, and my favorite verse in the King James Bible, where Mary tells him, Lord, he's been in the grave 3 days, and here it is. Surely he stinketh. That's a great verse. And Jesus answered, maybe he does, but don't call me Shirley. No, he didn't say that. That's what I would have said had I been there. This is the same Mary that hung on Jesus' every word while Martha was busy in the kitchen. And then Martha got mad and came out and told Jesus, hey, tell her she needs to get in here and help me. And he says, no, she's doing what's vital. You're just doing stuff you think is important that really doesn't stand the test of time. Mary urgently adored Jesus. The housework could wait. She was going to give her full, undivided attention to God. What do we let get in the way of our full attention to God? I want you to really open your heart this morning, because hopefully this message will really set something in stir inside of you. Guys, I think we get too comfortable in church. I think we get too comfortable in our walk with God. There's a great line in the book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where the kids are gonna go see Aslan, the lion. And Lucy, one of the girls, says, is he safe? And I think it's the groundhog that's taking her. And he looks at her and he says, no, he's a lion. Lions aren't safe, but he's good. Let me tell you something. Worshiping God is anything but safe. But it's good. You with me? I'm going to give you four things this morning about urgent adoration. Four things that I think we've got to cultivate in our hearts. And the first is up there on the board. The urgent adoration is unrestrained. Look at verse 7. A woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. Now, here's the way you ate in those days. You didn't sit in a nice kitchen chair, you know, like we do at Thanksgiving. You reclined at the table. And by the way, only family was allowed at the table. If you were a friend, you were allowed to eat, but you were either at the very far end or you were at like the kiddie table. Okay? Jesus was considered family here. So Jesus reclining at table, at the table. And he's reclining there. And that's the way they sit. Now, that would drive me crazy, trying to prop yourself on one elbow and eat. Because I can't picture eating pizza and then taking a drink of soda. But they had that weird way they ate back then. Here's what we don't understand. This is the Saturday night before Palm Sunday. This is a week before Jesus is crucified. Now, if you read the book of Matthew, you got to understand that Matthew isn't written as a history as much as it is as a collection of stories of Jesus, and it's not in chronological order. So when you read Matthew, it's a collection of the things that Jesus did, but he didn't worry about putting in order. He kind of grouped it by themes and some other ones. So here it is. This is before Palm Sunday. This is right before the triumphal entry, where Jesus goes into Jerusalem and they cheer him, and then a week later they nail him to a cross. This is an amazing time for Jesus. And Mary comes to him, and she breaks open this alabaster jar. Now, go to the next slide if you would, Andy. That's an alabaster jar. Alabaster jars were very, very expensive. And they were only used to hold the most precious things. Because alabaster itself is, and if you look, you can see the light shining through the other side of the alabaster jar. They were made basically for one-time use. A lot of them were made, and they would whatever you were going to put inside them. In this case, what they put inside it was spikenard, which was a really fragrant perfume. It hung on for days and days and days. A little bit of spikenard went a long way. It's not like the perfumes of today where if you spray it on at 8 o'clock, it's gone by midday. This stayed on and on and on and on and on. And it was very, very precious, very, very expensive. And so what they would do is they would put it inside, and then the guy who made the jar would actually seal the jar so that when you use that perfume, you broke the jar. That was it. It was a one-time shot. That's the alabaster box, the alabaster jar that she brought to Jesus. Now notice whose house they're at. They're at the house of Simon the leper. Leprosy doesn't get cured. In fact, if you were considered a leper, you know, lepers were not exactly, it was very contagious, number one. And they weren't exactly considered people you wanted around your house. In fact, if you were a leper and you came into town, normally you're in like a little enclave outside of town. If you came into town, you had to ring a bell and walk through town, unclean, unclean. And everybody knew not to touch you. Because in Jewish society, if you were unclean, you couldn't go to the temple. There was all kinds of stuff you couldn't do. And if anybody touched you or touched your clothing, they were considered unclean and they had to go live with the lepers. Now, this is probably not good for your self-esteem. Can you imagine? Walking through town, unclean, unclean. Not good for you. And if you got healed of leprosy somehow, you went through this long, arduous process and you had to go present yourself to the priest, and then you had to go wash in this pool, and then you had to go present yourself to the priest, and you had to do certain sacrifices, and it was just like really tough. They're at the house of Simon the leper. How can they go to Simon's house? He's healed. Makes sense, yeah? Nobody's going to put themselves in a place where they can be ceremonially unclean, especially not close to a holy day. Passover's coming up. They're not going to do that. They're at Simon the leper's house. See, sometimes you have to kind of read the whole story to get the whole story, don't you? They're eating there with Lazarus. Oh, remember the stinketh guy? That's what we're talking about. So you got a leprosy guy, and you got a guy who was dead. Jesus knew how to pick lunch companions. It's like, you know, the Knott's Berry Farm horror thing going to come to life. You know, all of a sudden, it's like every bad zombie movie you've ever seen. You got a guy with leprosy. My dorm director in college grew up in a leper colony. His dad was a missionary to a leper colony. And while we're eating lunch, he would tell me stories of leprosy. And if you don't know what leprosy is, it's a disease that literally eats away at your skin, your flesh, eats away the bones. And so while we're eating lunch, Backman would tell us stories of eating lunch. And he says, you've never really eaten lunch until you've seen a guy that doesn't have a nose. And you go, he puts a forkful of food in his mouth, and then someone comes out of, not his nose, out of the hole where his nose should be. And we're telling him, you know, Ken, we don't really need to hear that over scrambled eggs. Just not, although we did ask him if he ever told a guy a joke to make, you know how you tell a guy a joke while he's drinking milk and the milk comes out of his nose? That would be a whole different experience if a guy didn't have a nose. He just had a hole. The verse tells us that this is very precious. Well, let me tell you how precious this was. It's about a year's wages, this perfume. Average wages in Imperial Valley for a family is about $35,000. This is a $35,000 bottle of perfume. Joanna, you would love it. Joanna and I work together, and Joanna is the person who knows all things expensive. So this is better than a Coach purse. This is really up there. $35,000 for perfume. $35,000. If I spend $35,000 on something, it better have wheels and a motor. And I don't mean a one-time use car either. I mean, I want to drive this sucker for a while. In fact, I think if you add up the cost of all the vehicles I own, it'd come out to about $35,000. $35,000. That's what Mary had. Can you imagine a $35,000 jar of perfume? And it's not just that it's expensive, it's that it's so valuable. It was priceless. Mary fully understood the cost of the jar in her hand. Understand that. She didn't break it on and say, oh, crap, that was $35,000. What am I doing? She knew what this cost. She knew the value of it, and she chose to use it on Jesus. She broke the bottle. She slowly poured the perfume over his head. It ran down his hair, down his face, into his beard. It soaked into his garments, dripped onto his feet. When John tells the same story, says that Mary took her hair and dried his feet with her own hair. You get the intimacy of this moment? And as soon as she cracked that open, the fragrance must have filled the room. The sweet, sweet offering of adoration and joy and praise. Everybody was there, understood it. Everybody was there, experienced it. The financial cost of what she did not restrain her. The emotional cost didn't restrain her. Worrying about what other people thought didn't restrain her. Jesus was her whole focus. All she cared about was loving Jesus. Urgent adoration is unrestrained. We stand before God emotionally, spiritually naked. We say, God, I just love you. I want to give everything for you. I don't care how much it costs me. I don't care how much other people don't understand. I don't care about anything, God. I just love you. When is the last time that during worship service, or during your prayer time, God was your only focus? You didn't care about the cell phone and the Twitter feed and the text messages, and you didn't care about the person standing next to you, and you didn't care what anybody thought. You just stood there naked before God spiritually and emotionally, and you said, God, I've got to have you. We have guys who are afraid to shed tears. What's wrong with you? She could break this $35,000 bottle of perfume, and we can't break emotionally for God? Urgent adoration is unrestrained. I read a quote. I spoke last week to a bunch of people, young people, and I had a quote from Norman Schwarzkopf, Storman Norman, they called him, the guy that was in charge of the Gulf War. He'd been in Vietnam, and he was on Barbara Walters' show, and Barbara Walters asked him about the young men who gave their lives in the Gulf War, and he began to cry on national television. And she said, General Schwarzkopf, aren't you afraid to cry? And Schwarzkopf's answer was great. He said, Barbara, I'm afraid of a man who won't cry. Gentlemen, we've got a break before God. You can save your tough guy attitude for somebody who really appreciates it. God doesn't. We've got a break. We've got to let God get into our hearts. Next thing you need to know is that urgent adoration is impractical. Look at verse 8 and 9. And it's the computer slow. My computer is a great computer, but it's not set up for PowerPoint. Impractical. Look at verse 8. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste, they asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Mary gave her best. She gave her all extravagantly, lavishly, costly, unrestrained. But her act of worship wasn't appreciated by everybody there. Now, you go back and read John chapter 12. I'm going to let you in on a little something here. Look at the verse. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste, they said. Well, you read the passage in John chapter 12, which is a parallel passage of this. He says that the treasurer asked, why this waste? You know, the bean counter, the money guy. Any accountants in here? All right, then we can talk. Okay, anyway. Okay? My wife is like a math whiz. She does math because it's fun. Okay, there's something inherently wrong with that. But John says it was the treasurer who said, why this waste? This money could have been... Anybody remember who the treasurer of Jesus' people was? Judas Iscariot. Oh, yeah, the guy who sold him out for 30 pieces of silver. Oh, yeah, that guy. In fact, the hint in John is that he was skimming off the top all along. So why would you break this $35,000 thing? You could have sold that, give it to the poor, and I could have gotten my cut out of it too. Hey, worship's impractical. It is impractical for us to worship God like we do. Judas is there and says, dude, you could have used Aquavelva. You could have gone really old school and got some of that 60s high karate. A gallon of high karate, even back in the day, would cost you like $5. It smelled like turpentine that had been rubbed near a flower, but, you know, you could have it. And remember high karate? Yeah, oh, man, that stuff was hideous. It would peel paint. It really would. Bad, bad stuff. Then when I was in high school, the cool scent, Brute. And Jovan Musk. Oh, baby. Yeah, Jovan Musk. He was on. That was when a man smelled like a man. Or a weird kind of animal. That's what Musk is. And somebody there said, Judas said, hey, do you realize what we could have done with $35,000? And Mary said, yeah, I realize exactly what you can do with $35,000. You can worship Jesus. They weren't calmly inferring that maybe Mary had made a mistake. They weren't kind of mentioning it. They were out and out saying, Chica, you don't know what you're doing. And you know what? The world thinks that now. The world sees us and says, we're impractical. Why do you want to spend Sunday morning in church? Don't you know there's football games on? Why do you want to go to church? Don't you know you could sleep in on Sunday morning? Why would you want to go be part of that? It's impractical. Yep. And? See, why do we worry what they think? It's impractical to spend an hour in prayer every day when your schedule's already tight. It's impractical to give money to the church when you can barely have enough to pay your rent as it is. It's impractical to do all of these things for God. It's impractical to say, hey, God, I'm going to spend this time for you. It's impractical for us to love Him. It's impractical for us to give up things to become a Christian. It's impractical. It doesn't make sense. And? You know what else is impractical? Heaven. You know what else is impractical? The blessings of God. Does it make sense that the God of heaven, the creator of the universe, cares about Jerry Godsey? I'm nobody. I'm an internationally unknown writer. I'm not Billy Graham. I'm not Rick Warren. I'm not one of these great preachers. I'm just some guy pastoring a church trying to do something for God. Why would God care about me? Why would God care about you? You know why? Because he does. Because God is impractical. Because God doesn't make sense. The blessings of God don't make sense. I just know they're there, and I just know he lavishes them on me. If you look at my life doesn't make sense. The things that I do, the opportunities that I'm given, the great things that happen, none of it makes sense. And a lot of us are kind of like the guy who, you know, they're sitting around and the wife says, "Hey, you've been married to me 20 years and you never tell me you love me." And he said, "I told you I love you when I got married. If anything changes, I'll let you know." There's an old country western song a few years ago about, "I can't say the words, but you know I love you because of the way I act." Hey, if you can't say the words, you're a wimp. Men, tell your wives you love them. Go ahead, I'll wait. All right. We had a little long distance action here. They love each other, but evidently not enough to sit next to each other in church. Something. It's too close. They might, stray spit might get to me. Hey, it's impractical. It's also necessary. It's also awesome. Third thing is that urgent adoration is irreproachable. Verse 10. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She's done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you'll always have with you, but you will not always have me." Urgent adoration is irreproachable. The dictionary defines irreproachable as without reproach or blameless. Joanna and I work with evidence. And the evidence that we have has to be irreproachable. When we bring it into court, they can't say, "Well, you forged that evidence," or "You made that up." No, no. It's without blame. It's irreproachable. There's no way for us to fake that. That's what that is. Another great way to say it is, it's genuine, and you can't cast doubt on it. So here's the story. Mary breaks this jar of perfume over Jesus, 35 grand worth of perfume, and the disciples start talking amongst themselves. "Can you believe she did that? What is she trying to prove? Look at her. Think she's all hot stuff. What, is she crazy?" Yeah, exactly. Ladies get a bad rap that ladies gossip. Let me tell you something. Guys gossip. Guys gossip. If somebody stubs their toe in the hallway of the sheriff's office, it's all over the place in 15 minutes. And there's not a woman in sight. It's all guys. "Did you hear about so-and-so? They get on the radio. "Hey, got some 1036 confidential information for you. 10-3 to Tech 1. We can talk." Oh, it's bad. Or you'll know something's up when all of a sudden there's a whole lot of meetings all over the county. "Hey, so you're on the radio. Hey, can you 1098? Can you meet with me somewhere?" Okay. You know they're going to talk about something. You know what's going on. Something's gone on. And that's what's going on here. And they're talking back and forth amongst each other. And they're talking bad about Mary. And they're questioning her motives. And they're saying all kinds of stuff. And then Jesus dogs them. I like it. Jesus says, "Yo, what's going on over there? You talking?" No, not us, Jesus. No, we were discussing prayer requests. We were saying that, yea, verily, thou wouldst. They got busted. Can you imagine the look on their face? They're off in the corner talking. And all of Jesus, "Hey, you got something to say?" You know, they had that deer in the headlight look. You know, their eyes are as big around as pie tins. And they get that "oh crud" moment. All of a sudden, their stomach hurts and they realize, busted. And in the background, somebody said, "Awkward." Right? That's what's going on here. And Jesus says, you know what, guys? And he said it nicely. He basically said, shut up. See, you want to talk about the poor Judas? The poor is always going to be here. But you're not going to have me much longer. In fact, you're going to have me another week. And then I'm gone. You won't see me again. See, it's urgent. It's urgent that they do it now. And let me tell you something. Not everybody's going to understand your worship. Not everybody's going to take it at face value. They may criticize you. Well, you know, she sings like that just because she wants everybody to hear her sing. He just stands there and he waves his arm around like he's, you know, bringing in airplanes or something. He's just doing that for attention. Hey, you know what? You know who judges your worship? God. And let me tell you something. If you're ever here and you want to criticize somebody in worship, remember that they're not doing it for you. You're not the audience. Who is the audience? When we sing, who are we singing to? We don't want to make Victor feel good. We definitely don't want to make Victor feel good. We don't care how Victor feels. You tell that when he says good morning every morning, y'all go, eh. And then when Jeremiah comes up, you give him a better one. And I know you're doing it on purpose. I know you're doing it because you're hurting Victor's feelings. He goes back, he cries. And we all like, worship team, look, that's not their job. You're not singing for them. You're not singing for me. It's not like I'm in the back as the pastor taking notes. Ah, I see that, okay, not worshiping. Not worshiping too loud. Trying to dance, not doing a good job. Irreproachable. Hey, is it from your heart? Do it, baby. If God wants you to dance, cut a jig, man. Do it. If you ever see me dance, you'll know it's God. Because I'm not doing it on my own. I look awkward. Either that or like I'm having some kind of seizure. You may see a doctor. You may need a doctor to help me. Oh, look at Jerry. He's just unrestrained today. No, he swallowed his tongue. We need a doctor quickly. Epinephrine, quick. We got nurses now. I want nurses to help me out if that happens. We're getting kind of Andy brought this up. We're getting kind of pocket followings. You know, we got law enforcement. We got nurses. I don't know where the millionaires are. We're looking for that pocket. That pocket is escaping us so far. Hey, don't let somebody criticize you out of worshiping. Do you really care what the person next to you thinks? Are they your audience? If they're your audience, by all means, make sure to sing in their ear. You know, do it correctly. And if you dance, make sure that you've got the Arthur Murray School of Dancing in, you know, the dancing down. See, that's my dance. That's as good as it gets right there. It's embarrassing. It's really bad. But if God is your audience, it doesn't matter who hears. And that means that you're not singing extra loud to impress the person next to you. You're not singing extra quiet so the one hear you. You're not worried about anything because your worship is genuine. It's without reproach. And I love this last point. That urgent adoration is unsurpassed. Verse 12, Jesus said, still Jesus talking, he says, when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Judas is the one who whined about the money. All the money in Judas's money bag, gone. Right? It's not around anymore. What if she decided to hold on to the alabaster jar? Well, I'd like to break this for Jesus, but you know what? I need to hold on to it. Where would it be now? Lost in the dust of some ancient civilization that nobody's ever going to see again? Later on, the cat would have knocked it down or something and broken it. See, we worry so much about all of this stuff, and we don't realize that in a while, it's going to be just that stuff. Instead of worrying about the cost, instead of worrying about the criticism, instead of worrying about anything, She broke that for Jesus.
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.